Test, test, 1, 2. Test, 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. My name is Alex, and you're listening to Primetime Crime Time. This is Primetime. Fuck me. This is hard. Okay, I'm Alex, and you're listening to Primetime Crime Time with Connor, Charlotte, and your other Jesus Christ. Hey, Char, what's up? Dude, really? You've been late the last two times. Well, yeah. I'm here early to set up my mic and stuff. It's fine. Just get here when you can. No biggie. I was already planning on setting everything up on my own anyway, you know. Old habits. Hey, listen, I won't lie to you. I'm kind of freaking out. Me being introduced as an official podcaster just feels so, like, formal, you know? Right, yeah. No, you're right. Well, I appreciate you, okay? It feels good to know that you and Connie are behind me like this. Okay, yeah, just get here when you can. Love you.
Thank you for taking this call. Things just don't feel right, if that makes any sense. Kathy told me all these things, but she's crazy, so I put it off, back burner. But it ate away at me like a parasite, and I don't know. For the past year, it's been nagging at me. It's been a nagging feeling for 14 months. And I feel now is the right time. She said you wouldn't believe some of the things we've done. She said that they had killed 6 people at the Alpine Manor. She said Gwendolyn Graham suffocated the patients, and that she stood watch during at least one slaying.
So she was only an accomplice?
She said she just stood by and watched Gwen do the killings. She said, I thought of the families of the victims. So many people were getting hurt. But I noticed Kathy wasn't getting any better. I sensed a lot of guilt. She couldn't let go of what had happened. I came to you guys because she needed help. I needed to help her, despite the fact that we weren't together anymore.
Thank you for your bravery, Ken. Without you, this could have been far worse. Could have been a lot more bodies in the pile.
Right, yeah, no, it's not a problem. Anything to help her.
Hey y'all, my name is Connor with Primetime Crime Time, and what you just heard was Ken Wood, ex-husband of Kathy Wood, one of the killers we will be discussing in today's case, giving his confession to the police 14 months after his wife had told him about her involvement.
We know it's a pretty unorthodox way to begin an episode, but this entire case as a whole is, well, fairly unorthodox. My name is Charlotte, your resident know-it-all.
You're not a know-it-all.
But I sure as hell know a lot.
Interesting spin on that one.
I'm anything but predictable, Connie.
Excellent point. Okay, hey, also, we have some news over here at Primetime Crime Time. I assume all of you know that podcasts have a sound person.
Yeah, makes sense to me, considering podcasts are only sounds.
Yeah, well, our resident sound person, Alex, we all know her, we all love her, she's going to be joining the team as an official podcaster! Let's give her a big round of virtual applause!
Hey, bitches! Respectfully.
Yeah, we're pumped to welcome her into one of the seats at our literal table. Want to introduce yourself a tad, Alex?
Now you know these people already know me, but for a formal introduction, hi, my name is Alex, I'm a Sagittarius, huge lover of people, dogs, being outside, I love true crime, duh, and I'm super excited to be here.
Wow, that sounded like a dating profile.
Well, would you swipe on me?
I am going to swipe left on this conversation for now.
Embarrassed, Connie?
You know what, folks? You heard it here first. We've got Alex, the eligible bachelorette, over here. So DM us for inquiries for her hand in marriage.
All right, let's get back on track. Today, we will be delving into the case of the lethal lovers, Catherine Wood and Gwendolyn Graham.
Kathy and Gwen, for short.
Or Kath and Gua, for shorter.
Stupid.
And we will be talking about their killing spree at the Alpine Manor Senior Home in Walker, Michigan. So, Alex, want to set the scene for us?
I'd love nothing more. Okay, so the year is 1986 in Walker, Michigan, which is a suburb near Grand Rapids. The two women worked as nurses' aides in the care facility at Alpine Manor and quickly became friends. And soon after, lovers. The two of them supposedly worked together in order to complete 5 total killings within the nursing home in the span of 2 years. We'll get into the specifics later, but what's important to note is the speed their relationship progressed. It was a runaway train in almost every sense.
And you have to think, I mean, it's the 80s in Michigan. It probably wasn't entirely common for two women to just be out and proud lesbians to begin a relationship.
100%. But there were LGBTQ plus advocacy groups that started in Michigan that began as soon as 1973. Although there were many laws that outlawed gay marriage, they didn't get overturned until the late 2000s. But there was definitely a community of queer folks in the area who were advocating for the same rights as heteronormative couples.
Tomato, was this in the brief? Was I supposed to look this up? I didn't get the chance to.
No. I was just doing some extra research and found the timelines compelling. You know me, gotta get all the info I can.
Okay, good. I felt like I was missing something.
No, dude. You're doing great.
Thanks, dude. You rock, bro.
Okay. Don't test me, because I've got a mean Alex impression, and I'm not so sure that you would be thrilled about hearing that one.
Is that right?
Okay, can we end the tomato? We were doing so well.
Sure, totally. Sorry for distracting.
Oh, you're good. I just wanna go and get into this.
Yeah. Okay. So where were we?
I'll pick up right from where we left off. While it's not entirely likely that Kathy and Gwen were a part of these groups, their presence probably gave the two of them some reassurance.
Before we continue with the case, though, I do just want to mention that there will be a couple trigger warnings accompanied by the usual sound, so if you're not one for the guts and the gore, I would suggest tuning out for a little bit.
Tomato.
What? I mean, what did I say?
I just feel like that totally trivializes the use of trigger warnings.
Okay, how so?
Guts and gore? Like, come on, they're serious. We need to be serious when we talk about them. Do we not? I just feel like maybe ease up on the explanation.
I agree. Just, like, rephrase what you said, maybe.
Okay. All right. And 3, 2, 1. Okay. Before we continue with the case, I do just want to mention that there's going to be a couple trigger warnings accompanied by the usual sound. So there will be some disturbing content in this episode. When you hear the sound, just be aware.
Before we begin, we have another pretty cool announcement. On Twitter, we reached out to you guys and held a little raffle for one of you to leave us a phone message as well as give us a possible selection for our next case we cover.
And the winner of this raffle is... Can I get a drum roll?
I left my timpani at home.
Ugh, you're such a dweeb.
Drum roll.
Rebecca Guillon from none other than Paris, France.
Oui, oui.
Oh, you just wanted to say wee wee on recording, didn't you?
Wee wee.
Still, very exciting that we're reaching an international audience.
True. In any case, here's Rebecca's message. Let's take a listen.
Bonjour, Primetime Crime Time. I am Rebecca, and I love your show. I look forward to it every week, and I've told tons of my friends about it. So you're kind of famous over here in my little Paris neighborhood. The case I think you should do next is the case of Redouane Fayed. He was a leader of a prominent crime syndicate in France and was arrested several times, but able to escape. He is slippery in every sense. I find this one interesting, and I hope you do too. Cheers. And as they say here in France, à la prochaine.
Thank you, Rebecca, and congrats on winning the raffle. It was lovely to hear from you.
Yeah, it blows my mind that we even have listeners from across the pond.
Straight up. I thought it would just be like our parents listening.
I mean, yeah, my dad listens.
Yeah, same, but look how far we've come.
Oh, sidebar, but I have always wanted to date a French girl.
Okay, so this podcast is not Tinder. Maybe get it through
Listen,
your school.
What can I say? I'm a lady killer.
Oh, yikes.
Not like that. I mean, I'm a catch, like... You know what? Never mind. I'll shut up.
Ooh. That's a first.
Wow. I'm just saying she and I would have a lot to talk about considering I've seen Ratatouille like 15 times. That's all I was getting at, okay?
Uh-huh. Anyway, back to our other lethal lovers. Gwen and Kathy form a very strong relationship quite quickly, which the other nurses at the home notice almost immediately. They're spending a ton of time together and usually doing their work in tandem when possible.
So these two ladies are tight, nearly joined at the hip at the beginning.
And that ended up being true in their ultimate convictions, all as a part of a love bond that they were carrying out.
These two women, they lied, they stole, they cheated their way around being found out for quite some time. But thanks to Kathy's husband, Ken Wood, they were brought in for questioning almost a full year and a half after they began their spree at Alpine Manor.
I feel, in order to provide our listeners with a good basis for our facts, we should delve into Kathy and Gwen's backstory separately.
Yeah, this case in particular has a lot of fuckery going with it in terms of, you know, who these women were and what their relative truths were, so I think that is a splendid idea.
Yeah, because there's for sure a air of objective truth surrounding a lot of information in this one from the perspective of the police as well as the testimony of the women.
Right, and this way we can give you both sides of the story.
Yeah, kick us off, Connie.
Okay, in the left corner, weighing approximately anywhere from 120 to 160 pounds, we have Catherine Wood.
I hate this.
I'd expect nothing less. Now, Catherine, also known as Kathy, as we mentioned, was born in 1932. And before that, she grew up in Washington, the state of Washington, I mean, near an Air Force base with a father who served in Vietnam. And I have to say her father was less than adequate as a parent. Like this guy was just, he was just cold, like in every sense. She was physically abused by him and neglected to varying degrees, and her mother was not much better. And it's stated that she was cold as well, and she was harsh and critical of basically everything Kathy did growing up.
Yeah, she grew up pretty quickly and was pregnant by the age of 17 with Ken Wood's child, something that they both found slightly unexpected.
Ugh, gotta love a prom night, baby.
You need to chill.
Okay, sorry. Here.
Before her subsequent marriage with Ken, Kathy is described as having very few friends and being quite distant in her own life.
Yeah, and she was also diagnosed with a pathological personality with narcissistic tendencies.
Which, for those who don't know, is a very serious diagnosis. It's described as referring to enduring patterns of cognition, emotion, and behavior that negatively affect a person's adaptation, which in short means she wasn't able to connect with her outside world nor relationships as a neurotypical person would be.
Mm-hmm. Despite these conditions, she was still able to get married and carried out her pregnancy to completion.
Yeah, she had a baby girl in 1979, but that's kind of where things begin to get a little more off.
Kathy apparently became very easily aggravated after the child's birth, and oftentimes she was described as detached from her child and family. She even appeared visibly filthy, and the house became a mess, and she ultimately begins to disconnect herself from her own child, essentially abandoning her and her own husband. It's beyond messed up.
Yeah, these things could also be caused by postpartum depression, but no information available to us indicates that this was the cause.
A lot of women who come into my martial arts studio are struggling with that. It's a serious issue, one we don't talk about enough or advocate enough for. It's easy just to dismiss a new mother as crazy for not being able to love her child adequately.
Which is fucking ridiculous. Like, literally, just listen to women. It is not that hard.
Fucking patriarchy.
Fucking patriarchy.
Fucking patriarchy, yeah.
Damn right, Connor. In any case, she was never helped medically or psychologically for this problem, and her husband recommended that she get out of the house to distract herself.
Just what she needs. So stupid.
Uh-huh.
What do we need to do?
We don't need to do anything. I think that sometimes it's just not the depression or whatever, you know? Like, sometimes people just, they can't commit to their commitments.
Oh, totally. It's the same at work. Some women just aren't able to connect to their child, which breaks them. It does.
Yeah.
I mean, you're unfortunately kind of uniquely qualified on this stuff. Do you want to talk about it?
I mean, sure, yeah. I mean, after my mom left, she never really gave any reason for it. I mean, sometimes it really is just too much for people. And Kathy's neglect of her child and absence in her relationship with Ken, it could have so many contributing factors besides her mental health. I guess that's all I've got to add. Soapbox, put away.
Good points. Many women struggle with their mental health when it comes to motherhood, actually parents in general, so I think that distinction is important. Thanks, Connie.
Yeah, no worries. All in a day's work. Gotta air out the trauma somehow. Ho-ho! Anywho, so eventually, Wood began working as a nurse's aide at Alpine Manor after all this, and she's able to make some friends. There's actually a surprising amount of lesbians working at the facility, so she just begins to feel a sort of camaraderie, if you will, particularly with Gwendolyn Graham.
And as stated before, the two get close real quick.
Which isn't that like a stereotype for lesbians? I mean, like getting really, like getting married after 2 weeks? I guess that's just what I saw on Reddit, you know, like lesbians, because their situations are just more likely to get into relationships quicker.
Do you have any stats on that?
No.
Probably best to shut up then?
Oh, probably.
Okay, cool. All right, where were we?
Just tons of lesbians work as nurses in the facility.
Yes, lesbians. On that note, the residents of Alpine Manor are mostly geriatrics and other people on the older side with health problems.
It's also said when asked that almost every one of the workers at the facility thought that Gwen or Kathy could not even begin to contemplate murder.
They must not have known them very well.
Well, it would be hard to know these women if they only really ever spent time with each other.
And that's a fair point. But, okay, so we are going to get into some grisly details now. So this is your trigger warning. Kathy and Gwen committed their first murder in January 1987, targeting an older woman suffering from Alzheimer's who was unable to fight back.
They completed this killing by smothering the woman with a pillow until she had suffocated.
Okay, guys, here's where shit gets tricky. Gwen and Kathy both have different stories about how this all went down, both of which they each held up in court. Kathy Woods claims that the idea to commit the murders began as a challenge from Gwen to quote-unquote prove her love to her. And while this claim cannot be entirely proven, because there's a whole heck of a lot of she said, she said going on in this case, it seems that the claim of it being for the purpose of a love bond tracks. Who decided it was necessary is never really clear.
I just listen, okay? I love both of you a lot, but I'm not sure that I would be super chill with consecrating that murder style.
Why not? Seems kind of fake.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't necessarily be down for, like, murdering in the name of friendship.
Damn, Connie. I thought you were cool.
What? What do you want from me?
To prove your love for us with a series of killings.
And for the purpose of Connor's FBI agent listening in, we have never formally discussed anything of the sort.
Okay, let's move on before I get forcibly removed from my own house.
Fair enough. So in this particular killing, Kathy Wood claimed that Gwen had done the actual suffocation and that Kathy was told to watch and stand guard to notify Gwen of any dangers. And in later reports, it is said that they killed this woman to relieve her tension.
Oh my, just give her an Advil PM. God damn.
And here's the real kicker. This woman's death was not investigated until Ken Wood's testimony, so they dismissed it as nothing more than old age and left it at that.
That's absolutely appalling.
Yeah, exactly, because she would have had cotton fibers or at the very least signs of a struggle on her body.
And she was elderly, so it's very likely that any bruises or contusions that she had would have just been passed over as, like, regular signs of just being an old person, you know, because, like, well, I don't know. In my experience, old people are just kind of like, you know, caution to the wind at that. Like, you ever go up the stairs with your grandmother and she, like, holds onto the railing and it's like, it's like being in a hurricane because she has to hold onto it so hard, but then it's like, you know, you're going to fall.
And then she would bruise a lot, is that what you're trying to say?
I don't know. I just mean, like, old people bruise a lot. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
I mean, she was when she was alive.
Oh, Jesus. Shit. Okay, so, anyway, Kathy and Gwen have succeeded on their first killing and begin to think of it more as a game. It's not clear if the intent was only to do it once and then they got a taste for it, or if they had planned a spree from the beginning, but either way, it's beyond messed up.
Okay, let's get caught up on Gwen before we get into the murders too fast.
Because we're zooming now.
Gwendolyn Graham, also called Gwen, was born in 1963 in Tyler, Texas, and grew up on a farm with her family. Gwen's childhood was rough, like, scary rough. Gwen recounts that her father had an aversion to holding her and told her mother to have the same aversion because he thought holding a baby made them weak. Literally, holding a baby.
What?
that? Comforting a child damaged them so that they would never become strong. Ugh,
Jesus Christ.
It doesn't end there, unfortunately. Gwen's parents also believe that children should learn about death from a very young age, where meat comes from, how things die, etc. So, from an early age, she was subjected to watch chickens be beheaded and pigs slaughtered.
Okay. I mean, not to sound contrarian, I guess, but, like, she was growing up on a farm? So I guess slaughter is, like, kind of all over the place.
Right, that's completely true, but I have never in my life heard of parents doing it for the sake of teaching a child about the concept of death. It's more to find comfort in the trade and normalize the need for killing animals as a food source.
Yeah, that's a good point. Despite that, though, I think that these things all put together would definitely have some sort of impact on a child, at the very least.
And get this. Once as a child, Gwen's dog, Misty, spooked one of the horses on their farm, which resulted in a rider being thrown. Her father was so enraged that he ordered Gwen to kill her dog. That's fucked up. Which she did. And then had to bury her own dog in their backyard.
Yeah. And then she dug her dead dog's remains up several weeks after and kept the skull, bones, and teeth in, like, this tiny alabaster box.
Yeah, that definitely would have fucked me up significantly.
Yeah. Okay, everyone, here comes another trigger warning. While living at home, Gwen was also subjected to many kinds of abuse, not limited to beatings, cigarette butts being put out on her skin, and molestations from her father. In total, she had around 31 different scars left on her body from each of his drunken rages.
Oh my god, that's awful.
Oh yeah. Well, some good news is that at 22, she moved away from home to Grand Rapids, Michigan to escape.
Good for her.
Soft tomato. Should we be saying that? Like, good for her? It's just that she killed 5 people. I mean, it's not like she's... I don't know. Does that make sense?
Sure, that's an interesting point, but I do think it should be celebrated every time someone's able to escape their abuser. That takes incredible bravery and strength. So, no matter the person, I'm always gonna have the tendency to applaud their power to live.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, let's move on.
Okay, 3, 2, 1. After moving to Grand Rapids, she found her way to Walker and began working at Alpine Manor.
Okay, we're caught up now, great.
Yep, and we're going to delve into some of the psychology.
Love it.
Alrighty, so we know that Kathy suffered from pathological personality disorder with narcissistic tendencies, so we already know that she is slightly detached from a reality as a whole. In accounts with Ken Wood, he said that Kathy was incredibly manipulative throughout their relationship and loved to play games and toy with him, as well as others.
Yeah. He even said sometimes that she would call the house pretending to be some other woman to try and lure Ken into an adulterous relationship.
So she's entirely capable of lying and playing mind games to get what she wants.
Exactly. Which brings us to the case. Kathy claimed in her testimony that it was in fact Gwen's idea to begin these games, which is completely unlike anything Gwen has ever done in her life.
Because Gwen herself suffered from some pretty serious mental health issues as well, including borderline personality disorder and several psychopathic personality traits. And she also is said to be of below average intelligence, and like she has just a fairly low IQ.
And not to point fingers, but this would make Kathy a far better candidate for the brains behind the operation. It would be far more difficult for someone like Gwen to format these plans due to her, for lack of a better word, simplicity.
Yeah,
but in any case, the murders continue, as does Kathy's manipulation of the people around her. The two began a game of sorts with the killings. Alpine Manor became their very own amusement park.
They even went so far with their plot as to make, like, secret codes about the game. Like, one of them being that they would say, "I love you X amount of days," with the amount of days being every person that they have murdered together. They tried to spell out the word murder with the letters of their victims' first names.
Which, if you ask me, doesn't sound like a fun game at all.
Like they could have just picked Monopoly or something.
Yeah, but their love for each other knew no bounds. And the game was just the tip of the iceberg, I guess.
Kathy Woods' mental state could be described as temperamental, but have you seen her lover, Gwen? I wouldn't be so judgmental. Gwen said to me, "Life's getting stale," and I know. cement our loving tale. Time to play a little game. Nothing like a little game to make them love you. Nothing like a little game to make you grin. Who can really give out blame when it's just fun to spell out all your dark desires? No loony bin for you. You're just floating on gossamer wings or rags. Get such a rush when we pack our bags. Oh, what's a good girl to do? And pretty soon we had a plan so good it's bad. End a life to prove our love truly deeply mad. The game was good.
The game was great.
So struggles tripped us up. But I've had plenty prior games that past have filled my cup.
Kathy, please, can you give me one more chance?
Boring. Sorry, I wouldn't. Oh well. All of you are boring me. I need much more than someone just adoring me.
I do, I swear.
Honey, we could play a new game. Something different. Bring us fortune and fame. Maybe someday some new clever conceit like I love you accident.
However many times you've taken a life. Like a little game, nothing like a little game, nothing like a little.
They were just intoxicated with each other.
Over the span of their game, they ended up ending the lives of four other patients at Alpine Manor, all in the same fashion.
Always smothering the life out of them. And in most cases, the deaths were ruled as natural or just due to old age, so they were never questioned about it. Until Ken Woods called to the police.
Yeah, thank God for Ken, man.
I mean, really, what else was Kathy expecting? She literally told him exact details about the murders, and she fully just expected him to let it go as one of her games. I'm pretty sure if either of you told me you were smothering old people to death, I would just, I'd raise an eyebrow, is all I'm saying.
Not to be a dweeb, but can we tomato for a second?
What's up?
Am I doing this right? I feel like I'm just kind of winging it, like bullshitting a lot.
I mean, it's kind of just how it feels. Like you're just flying by the seat of your pants. Honestly, I think you're doing super well. Like, I am really not trying to blow smoke up your ass right now or anything. I really think having you as a podcaster just kind of feels natural.
Yeah, I mean, it just adds another brain to the mix, which we truly need because Connor's only working with, like, 60% of one at the moment.
And if I ever have access to 100% of my brain, it is, as they say, over for you hoes.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't absolutely shitting the bed.
Okay. That's fine, because that's my job.
Wait, I thought you were more of a bedwetter, if I recall, until the ripe old age of 13?
Can you stop bringing up my trauma?
Okay, sorry, bedwetter.
I didn't realize that when you pee in your dreams, you pee for real every time, okay? That one took me a long time.
Once again, 60%. All right, but yes, Alex, you're doing great. It's honestly been really nice to have you to, like, volley off up here.
Yeah, seconded.
Yeah, you don't have anything to worry about.
Okay, cool.
All right, we ready to get back into it?
Yep.
Hell yeah. So, 3, 2, 1. Their spree went on for like roughly 2 years, but then things started to get rocky.
Yeah, the lovers, who were once so infatuated with one another, they began to just split apart. Gwen claims that Kathy began to become more manipulative, asking her to do things, not talking to her, classic hot and cold stuff, which pushed Gwen away in an instant, and then Gwen found another lover quite quickly, and began a secret affair with another nurse's aide in the facility.
Oh my God.
At least go someplace else to have an affair. That's so stupid.
Oh, it gets stupider, don't worry. When Kathy finally approached Gwen regarding the affair, she apparently held both Gwen and the mistress at gunpoint and said, I can put Gwen away for a long time. I don't actually know if she sounds like that. Subsequently, this made Gwen flee back to her hometown of Tyler, Texas.
She needed to escape Kathy. I don't blame her.
And here's where the stupid comes back for a third time. Gwendolyn Graham is arrested in Tyler, Texas for writing bad checks, and she's questioned about her involvement with Kathy, which she denies ever being a part of the crimes, and then she's polygraph tested almost immediately after she's arrested.
Both women are questioned to an exhaustive extent.
Sit down, Miss Wood. We heard from your husband a very disturbing report. He told us that you've taken part in a terrible sport of cutting life short.
Officer, I don't understand.
You failed this test by your own hand.
Well, I don't know why I'm here.
You know that people have died.
Yes, people have died, but not by me, not by my hand. I've had so many struggles, you understand, but never once did I take it out on them.
3 days later, she calls me again. Hello?
It's Kathy! I've just been eaten up inside. I wanted to tell, I was terrified. Gwen is so smart, she can win every game. And I was afraid she'd throw the blame. But I can't ignore it anymore. I finally should settle up the score. Gwen planned it all, she's sick and depraved. I really didn't want to, but she forced it and I caved.
Give me some details.
It's too awful. We were trying to go in a certain order to spell out the word murder, but then some people struggled, and Gwen didn't want to get caught, so we changed our method. I loved her so much, I'd do anything she said, but I couldn't kill them myself, not even for her.
Sit down, Miss Graham. You know why you're here. Your checks didn't clear, and we've picked up some new stories.
Like what?
Like your old flame, Kathy Wood, and your games and categories.
What did she tell you? What did she say? Kathy's crazy anyway. She'll lie to you just what she prefers. Wouldn't trust a word on that mouth of hers. I don't know what she did now, but I never had a part of it. That's my vow. That woman tried to drag me down for years in double time. Don't know what happened. I was never part of any crime. Oh, Kathy, what did she tell you? What did she decide?
I wanted to tell, I was terrified.
Anyway. She'll lie to you, just what she prefers. Wouldn't trust a word on that mouth of hers. I don't know what she did now, but I never had a part of it. That's my vow. That woman tried to drag me down for years in double time. I don't know what happened, I was never part of it, and I can't.
Of course, the two of them were suspected as guilty because obviously their conflicting stories were conflicting.
The two of them lied through their teeth time and time again.
But luckily, a polygraph never lies.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. I think I could probably fool a polygraph machine.
Oh, yeah? You admitting to being a good liar?
I'm not exactly saying that.
Last I recall, you were a pretty decent liar. Like that one time you lied to me about totally not having feelings for me in the third grade. Or the time you said you totally didn't poop your pants in the Six Flags parking lot.
Okay.
Or there was a time.
Okay, quit.
All I'm saying is that you could probably get away with it because you're so good at hiding the truth.
What else have you been hiding from us, Connor?
I'm not answering that. But I do think that maybe we should just switch things up a bit and talk about why we're doing the episode.
Okay. But we will be returning to the topic of your deception.
That's not necessary.
Whatever you say.
Well, personally, I think this episode is a good choice because it deals a lot with the objective truth, especially in regards to the two women who ultimately turn on each other and confess against one another.
Okay, spoilers.
Okay, I think we all saw it coming, especially with how manipulative Kathy's painted to be. I think it's also worth noting that we haven't done many cases where murder was the focal point, which, to be quite honest, is super fun. So I just wanted to add a little spice. Plus, you know, they're gay.
What do you mean by that?
You know, just... representation?
Not the best queer role models, if you ask
okay,
me.
Okay, well, yeah, But it's just nice to see some queer representation, even if they are ultimately shitty people.
Okay.
Interesting.
Okay, whatever. In any case, the objective truth is what interested me most, because there's a whole hell of a lot of lying and manipulation going on in the story, among many others, in the American justice system.
That is a good point, because there's just a microcosm of other related cases like this, where both defendants claim innocence, but there's only one that can be the truth. So it's really the ultimate test of the justice system, like you said.
Microcosm, good word.
I think it's also super important to do things like this and tell these stories because it allows us to actively show ourselves protecting our listeners.
What do you mean?
Like, this is sensitive subject matter, and if we talk about it objectively and in an informed way while providing necessary warnings, I think we set a great example on how to protect listeners.
I did not even think about it like that.
Just my constant train of thought, you know, quirky.
Moving on. So these women have now done 5 murders total, but shit is going to start getting messy again, which, I mean, it's already really messy, but it's the deaths were ruled as natural, right? And so the families were allowed to deal with the bodies however they wanted. So 3 of the families opted for cremation and the other 2 for burial. But this means that all the forensic evidence on those that wasn't found the first time is gone because it's been burned up.
And the only real reason why the police even know anything is because of motherfucking Ken Wood. My king.
Yeah, we love Ken.
It's infuriating because if they can conclude any other way than a natural death, the bodies could have just been a damning piece of evidence for the prosecution.
Mm-hmm. After the 2 women were questioned, the bodies of the 2 deceased were exhumed.
What do you mean?
Well, they dug these people up from their own graves that had been laid to rest nearly 2 years prior.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
And because of the time they were buried, the natural decay of their bodies yielded very little evidence. Had they checked the air pathways maybe a month or 2 after their deaths, they would have found cotton fibers like I said before.
Damn, we are really leaning into the gory gross stuff this episode, aren't we?
You know, if it bleeds, it leads, Con.
What?
It's a quote from a news director named Eric Pooley in 1989. If it's got gore, you know, people are interested. Call it morbid curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Okie dokie. Where were we at? Oh, the women's interrogations. Yeah?
Works for me.
Let's do it in sections, though. I feel like maybe that'll clear some things up. Some of this tomfoolery, you know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Let's start with Kathy.
Okay, so, yeah, she said she had no part in the actual killings.
She said it was Gwen that held the pillows.
Kathy said Gwen sent her letters regarding the murders.
Which couldn't be confirmed.
And Kathy also says she's supposed to be on the lookout for Gwen.
She did this for Gwen because she was apparently afraid.
Okay, so now we're moving on to Gwen. Her testimony is pretty, you know, it's smaller.
She denies involvement entirely.
Denying any knowledge of them ever happening.
She said she feared Kathy and that's why she ran away.
Both women were polygraphed. Kathy failed her first one, and Gwen's came back inconclusive.
Now, in Kathy's, she claims that she only did it to appease Gwen and that she did not assist in the murder. She takes another test after this and confirms these things to be true.
But people learn to mess with polygraphs, so often they are not exclusively used to determine guilt.
Yet, the mistresses of Gwen Graham is questioned by Michigan police under retrograde analysis. Retrograde analysis? What's that you ask? Great question. Hypnosis. They fucking hypnotized her into corroborating on Kathy's testimony, so the 2 of them ultimately agreed with each other.
Okay, so retrograde analysis is not admissible in court. So the detectives take that as fact, and they just go ahead with charging Gwen for the full 5 counts of first-degree murder. The only witness actually being able to say that they saw anything was Kathy.
Yep, that makes me sick.
I know. And the worst part is that this could have been easily solved had they performed 1 actual autopsy investigating foul play.
But the people were older, it makes sense, to a degree, I guess, but still the police handled this really poorly, to say the least.
100%. This could have ended after the first death, like I keep saying.
And as far as Kathy's motive goes, it could have just been that she was jealous of Gwen's new lover, and she just wanted to frame her. And Gwen's statement could corroborate this. But despite all the motives, both women are arrested in 1989. And now that we've covered all that, we're going to take a little break. So here's a message from our sponsors.
Looking for love but don't really know how to find it? We've got you covered. Here at Bimbo, we use an exclusive algorithm to match you with your soulmate. Bimbo specializes in finding folks with the same IQs and getting them together so that they can have conversations with other people who are on the same wavelength.
What was that?
We got an email.
Oh, from who?
Storm Rage 1212.
Oh, the Baby Jessica raffle thing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Storm Rage 1212 says, Connor... Ooh, a direct message to you, Connie.
All right.
Connor, I want to thank you for reigniting me. I have not known such happiness and drive since I started listening to you on the show. You are the reason I wake up in the morning. I don't know where I would be without you in this podcast. You are everything to me. Thank you, Mitchell Redmond.
Okay, Jesus Christ.
Whoa.
Okay, that's intense. Why does that name sound familiar?
Yeah, it does ring a bell. Maybe he's like trying to flirt with you or something.
Huh. He's not very active on Facebook.
I mean, who is, though?
Okay, here's his profile. Do you recognize him?
He looks... I don't know, he looks familiar-ish.
He only posts memes on Instagram.
From our last messages with him, he seemed kind of normal, so this is weird.
Yeah, I know.
You alright, dude?
It's not really that big of a deal.
Okay, just making sure.
Okay, we ready to move on?
Yeah, let's just keep going.
Alright, 3, 2, 1. Thank you to our lovely sponsors for, well... sponsoring us. We love you lots, and this wouldn't be possible without you. So, without any further ado, back to the case at hand, lovelies.
Hi, I'm Ken. The dating world is rough, you can just ask me. When times are getting tough, think about Kathy. She might have killed 5 people in her prior role, and she's my ex-wife. It weighs on my soul. But if you're looking for some help, then I'm your man. I just try to be a good guy, doing what I can. When Kathy told me what she got up to, it festered for a bit. I just couldn't believe it. She's sometimes a B-word, but usually she'll work it out and give up the fit. But I felt awful, so I went to the station and said, I gotta tell. It's a terrible story of respiratory woes. I think my ex-wife is going to hell. Some people say they're sorry. They don't know how I deal. Of course it wasn't my fault. I'm kind of the third wheel. Yeah, Kathy put me through it, but she's dealt with a ton. Still, if you'd say to review it, I'd give no stars out of none.
Ken? Ken.
Huh?
Ken.
Oh, am I rambling again?
It's okay. It's all right. That's all we need from you today. You've been a great help. Thank you.
For sure. I just try to do what I can.
You're a good man, Ken Wood.
Thank you, officer. Anything to help.
After Kathy and Gwen's arrests, they are swiftly brought into court for trial. This trial is very interesting because it focuses heavily on the mental health of Gwendolyn Graham. However, Kathy's pathological personality and narcissism are never once brought up.
Gwen's mental health is honestly attacked, which is partly due to the fact that the star witness is Kathy Wood herself.
What a load of bullshit.
Sick joke.
Imagine being Gwen. That would feel like drowning from the get-go.
And they couldn't even bring in Gwen's mistress because of the fact that they used retrograde analysis on her. And what makes that worse is that her lover, under retrograde analysis, was essentially bullied into telling the police all the answers they wanted to hear anyway while she was under hypnosis. And a person in this state would not have the wherewithal to get themselves out of the hypnosis unless they knew that they were explicitly being hypnotized. However, in most cases of retrograde analysis, which we should call ret-anal for short, the hypnosis happens without the recipient even knowing they're being hypnotized.
How do you know so much about this?
You aren't even looking at your notes.
I find it interesting, okay? I watched a lot of documentaries on this stuff. I tried to hypnotize myself. Y'all haven't done any of this?
Dude, no.
Absolutely not.
Well, okay, so I'm the weird one, even though Charlotte spends all of her time researching Jackson Pollock-esque blood smears.
All right, moving on.
It's not weird. It's not.
Might have to hypnotize me for me to believe that.
Listen, had they leaned into the forensics, they could have saved 4 additional lives and probably discovered which specific woman was responsible for the killings. Forensics can hold so much more truth than even a testimony.
Which brings us back to Kathy being the star witness. She states that Gwen was the mastermind of the entire endeavor and swears that she only went along with it because she loved Gwen at the time, and also because she feared her, manipulating the court once again.
And despite the storytelling of Kathy, she is still sentenced and charged with one count of second-degree murder and one count of conspiracy to commit second-degree murder.
She was sentenced to 20 to 40 years on each count at the Federal Correction Institute of Tallahassee.
Gwen, on the other hand, being the prime perpetrator in the investigation and the recipient of most of Kathy's unfounded accusations. Graham was found guilty of all charges, 5 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of conspiracy to commit murder, and sentenced to 5 life sentences without the possibility of parole, and sent to Robert Scott Correctional Facility in Lansing, Michigan, where she still remains.
Some people claim that their separation really hurt Kathy because her plan was to be at the same prison as Gwen to make sure they could never be apart, and so that she could hold her affair over her.
Kathy planned to tie Gwen down until the end of time.
She was Kathy's puppet, and she played the part against her will.
Time is a ribbon, it ebbs and it flows. I might have loved you, but we'll never know. Have known just how far we would go. I would have followed you down. Time is a ribbon, it ebbs and it flows. I might have loved you, but we'll never. Just how far we would go. I would have followed you down. My mind is a prison. My mind is a cage. No chance to be risen.
Stood a chance when it came to Kathy's claws sinking deeper into her.
It seemed like she never really ever had a chance.
Right.
And want to know the real nut punch in this whole situation?
Harsh wording, okay.
Investigators still don't even know if they are correct in their verdict.
They made all of their accusations against Gwen strictly based on circumstantial evidence. Nothing concrete, and with only Kathy's testimony. Citing that they also used Ken's testimony, which was essentially whatever Kathy fed him. Stellar work.
And on that resoundingly positive note, that's all we've got for you this week. It's been a pleasure blabbing at you for the better part of an hour. I'm Alex, your newest addition to the hosting team.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Charlotte.
And you've been listening to Primetime Crime Time. Later, skaters.
And that's a wrap. I'm cutting that last line, Connor.
What?
Later, skaters. Come on, man.
All the kids are saying that.
Who's that?
I don't know. Let me see.
Maybe Pops has some company coming.
Yuck.
I don't know. You've been looking kind of good lately with the facial hair. I'd swipe right.
Okay, please stop.
Very rugged.
Jeez.
To Connor with love. Aw. Thanks, you guys. And red velvet. Oh, my God.
What?
Where did you guys even order this from?
Did you?
No. Did you?
No.